afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. You got your mic all set there?
I can't seem to like get it situated, and every time I touch it, it sounds like I'm...
A thunderstorm in here.
I'm sorry.
Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape is right now getting ready to sell the Honda generators. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rush is coming. The heat's coming on. We'll get a little north wind, get a spark, and there goes our power. So get ready for that. Go by and see them. They got great deals right now. Also on John Deere equipment. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just off I-5. And you can reach them on the phone at 226-9226 or on the web at papemachinery.com.
And there you have it.
There you go.
Okay, so today is June 14th, 2020. Ooh.
Yeah.
They keep backing up and getting louder.
Yeah.
I think I'll back up some more.
Oh.
Okay, I'll stop talking.
Why are you so loud?
I don't know. I'll go sit out in the car.
Oh, no.
They're really.
Okay, you have to speak. And then I'm adjusting you.
Oh, okay.
So just go ahead.
It was me. I just kept backing up.
No, I'm turning you up because you were getting quieter.
Oh, well, I was trying to not be the loudest person in the room.
It's okay to be the loudest in the room. That's quite all right.
I'm the loudest in the room. I already know that. Okay, so June 14th, 2020. It is Flag Day.
It is Flag Day. Would you like to hear a little, look at that.
Got my flag shirt on.
Flag shirt. Would you like to know a little trivia about Flag Day?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Flag Day. Well, first of all, our American flag, 13 stripes, represent the 13 original colonies. I don't know if folks knew that.
I lived in one.
Yeah, you did.
Grew up in one.
Yep.
The colonies.
August 3rd, 1949, Truman, through an act of Congress, declared June 14th National Flag Day. And Congress adopted our Stars and Stripes as the American flag on June 14th, 1777.
Which means every red-blooded American should have a flag outside their house today.
Yes, they should.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go look as soon as we get out of here.
Bring a little one and put it right here.
Taking down your address.
I know. I walked the dog today. I saw like three. I saw one that was all messed up. It's been messed up for a week. It's killing me. We go down to that guy's house with a ladder and take it down. It's
maybe
horrible.
It was in a battle. You don't know.
Yeah. It was in a battle, all right, with some wind. Yeah. All righty. So we have everything posted on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. I have created tabs for shows we've done on veterans, South Africa, China, Islam, environmentalism, national security, which will be our topic today, and marijuana. I guess I shouldn't put those two right next to each other. They're on the bottom, other than they're kind of related in a weird way. So that being said, we have two guests on with us today, Dr. Lyle Rapacki, who was on last week. And if you missed last week, you really should – I would encourage you to go listen to that show. We post everything later in the day on Sunday with no commercials. It's in our archive under the page that we have built for each show, and it costs nothing to listen. So, and forward it to your friends or do whatever you like with it. But we want the information to get out. I'm going to have him do a little recap on last week, but we should tell you, for those of you who may not know, and I've listed all the shows that he's done with us over the years. He's a private sector intelligence, behavioral analysis, and threat assessment specialist. And since June of 2010, he's provided select members of the Arizona Legislature intelligence briefings on border security and threats to Arizona sovereignty. He receives, analyzes, and disseminates critical intelligence from and to law enforcement, intelligence, and government communities. He has an extensive bio. It just keeps going. And so I don't want to I really would encourage you to go look, because so much of the time we have to listen to people who are unqualified talk about topics that we're going to be discussing today. We have to hear people who are, you know, they're just giving you their opinion. So this isn't a show about opinion. This is a show about facts. Our second guest is Claire Lopez. We have had her on before. We've had a number of mishaps. Mount Rushmore and a couple other things got in the way. So we're really excited she's back again. She's the founder and president of Lopez Liberty LLC. Her mission is to alert and educate Americans on a range of national security threats, international as well as from the Islamic movement, the Muslim Brotherhood, and collaborators among the ranks of the Marxist communists in this country. Something tells me we're going to talk about that today, just for the fun of it. She was a vice president for research and analysis at the Center for Security Policy, the senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. She's on the board of advisor. She's a member of the board of advisors for the Canadian Mackenzie Institute. In 2016, she was Senator Cruz's presidential campaign national security advisor on his team, and provides expertise as an instructor on Iran, Hezbollah, the Red-Green Axis for understanding the threat, a nationwide training program for federal, state, and local agencies, and the private sector on global Islamic movement and jihadi networks. Imagine that. I'm skipping to the bottom now. I'll fill you in on some other stuff later. She's the author of several books, so I'm going to put those up on the web. She has a BA in communications and French from Notre Dame College of Ohio and a master's in international relations from the Maxwell School of Syracuse University. And she completed the Marine Corps Officer Candidate School in Quantico before declining a military commission to join the CIA. However, she was there in the CIA.
As far as you know.
Mm-hmm. But we're not telling.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a secret.
Whew. That was as fast as I could do it.
Of that.
Okay, Dr. Lyle, you were going to recap with us 4 points in the 4 minutes we have left. I feel like I'm on a race. It's a race.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much. We may only be able to get through a couple of them, and then we'll take the break, and then I'll come back and finish.
All
because
right.
I want to make this so Claire can pick right up. She's got some really powerful information, and I think by my laying this down as a foundation, it will make more sense what she's going to say. Last week, we talked about the four stages of subversion. The first stage was demoralizing a nation or a people. And that takes usually anywhere from 16 to 20 years because it's done mostly through the educational system. A form of brainwashing occurs in doing this. The educational system, the students are purposefully, deliberately dumbed down. Critical thinking is removed from their equation. And what ends up happening besides the loss of critical thinking is the introduction of Marxism. Socialism is pumped into the heads of the students by socialistic professors and those that support the Marxist ideology. What happens then is basic values are no longer taught. They're not allowed to challenge the process at all. They're allowed to just sit there and absorb. And then what happens is they even go after taking down the structure of a nation, including it all the way to the family unit, the family structure. And they begin to introduce collectivism. So what we're seeing in Seattle, for instance, is a village of about seven square city blocks there. And they've become their own little village, their own little government. And they all take care of one another, and they all share food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds like a cult, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Facts don't matter anymore. Moral standards are loosened or removed completely. The second stage is destabilization, where an actual very formal process occurs to destabilize a community or a state or a nation. And that usually takes several years because what you're doing is you're destabilizing the economy, you're destabilizing foreign relations of that nation and the military. So you're disrupting the entire flow of government at the local level all the way up to the national level and then the economy nationally and internationally. Then the next stage is the crisis stage. This is developed and put into play. It's very formulated. Usually takes about 6 weeks once they begin to start the crisis for it to really hit a tandem. And we saw that twofold here, in my opinion. Claire might give some more insight on this, but we had the coronavirus crisis that really set us up economically and socially and isolated us and created a breakdown in family and also in our communities. And that took about 3 months, and then came this crisis that we're now still experiencing, the rioting. Not the protesting, rioting. And a revolution usually comes out of a crisis, and that's usually by pushing some form of an idea, some form of a revolutionary concept, and the masses pick up on that. And then the last process we talked about last week was normalization. After the crisis, what we end up having is a new government emerges, and they begin to bring all sorts of goodies and wonderful promises to, again, stabilize the economy, stabilize the neighborhood or the community or the state or the nation. They actually eliminate the free market. They bring government into such a play that it takes over everything, so there's really no thinking, which again the students don't care about because they've already been trained in that, so they're numb. And you have benevolent dictators who end up showing that, hey, we can take care of your problems, we'll furnish everything, we'll take care of everything, don't worry, we're here to help you. It's kind of like what Reagan said, if the government shows up at your front door, don't worry because I'm from the government. Well, that's scary.
We're here to help.
Because the government ends up taking... Yeah, we're here to help.
I'm not the government, quickly, but I'm here to interrupt because...
because of the capitalism.
I'm getting the high side. If that is a little celebration of capitalism here on Flag Day. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? Your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Didn't want to wreck your story, Lyle, but there you go. That was your spoiler alert song. Okay, back to where we left off.
Yeah, the fourth point of giving everything away and creating stability.
Yeah.
Yeah, after we have the crisis, which is manufactured, then we have a call for normalization. And this is also part of the illusion that everything's going to be all right, when in reality, culture, we have a replacement of values, we have a replacement of government as we've known it, and in our case, the constitutional form of government.
Hey, Lyle, we're having that phone thing again.
We're still in the crisis phase.
Hey, Lyle, we're losing you for like 5 seconds at a crack for some reason.
Me now. You still there?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
We just were missing some important parts. No. Okay.
Can you hear me?
There you go. I can hear you now.
I think it's on your end, you guys.
Sure.
I'm losing you too, Lyle.
Well, very quick.
Oh, boom. Thanks, Claire.
I also am losing your sound every little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're going into the cone.
How is this happening?
I don't know. You're going into the cone of silence. There's something funky going on.
Well, then I'll be quiet. we'll let Claire talk. So we're finishing. We're still in the crisis phase, but they're trying to move out of that now to get into this normalization. But it's a new normalization, and it's away from our constitutional form of government and the principles that this nation has been raised. And I think this is a good opportunity now to transition and let Claire step in, because she has done some very powerful presentations just in the last week or two on all of this to law enforcement and to other matters related to keeping our peace and our principles. So I think, Claire, if you could step in, that would be really great.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. And that was a very good basis to open us with. My background for what I'm going to talk to you about comes from teaching law enforcement classes, sheriff's departments and police departments around the country with John Guandolo and Understanding the Threat, his organization. And late 2015, maybe the beginning of 2016, I began to notice what I was seeing, the development of street chaos. And we'll remember this was the beginning or getting into, the 2016 presidential election cycle. And in particular, I saw a number of groups that I'll talk to you about, that were, heading towards violence, disruption, street violence, attacking law enforcement, and so forth. So I went to John, and I said, we need to add a module to our training course about what we came to call the red-green axis. Red stands for communist Marxism. Green, of course, the Islamic threat, meaning in this country, the Islamic movement and its vanguard, the Muslim Brotherhood. And you might add another color in there, and that would be, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement, which is an umbrella group, too, and is very much aligned with the others. So I created the model, taught the model through 2016, I think into 2017, and then things quieted down in a way after President Trump was elected, and the battle went to halls of Congress, impeachment, and all of that, and less so on the streets. Well, I realized as we approach this year, 2020, that this was going to start up again, all over again. I knew it was going to happen. And so I began updating my presentation. The coronavirus outbreak, I think, delayed matters, as well as, you know, the end of winter and, you know, cool, in many places, you know, cool, rainy, stormy spring, but now we're full into it. And as far as the coronavirus itself, I've got a whole nother set of information and presentation on that. I have a background in biological warfare, countering it, that is, and I do believe that this virus, the SARS COVID-19 or COV2, sometimes called virus, is something that was bioengineered in Chinese labs, bioweapons labs, but I also do think still that it got out by accident. Never mind, it really consumed the first part of our year as well as so many others around the world, and I think delayed what we're seeing now. But what we're seeing now, I think, is the result of plans and organization long prepared before this. What I think we're looking at was on Memorial Day night, that was May 25th, a spark to a pile of tinder that had already been laid and piled high for a long time before. Nobody knew that this was going to happen, that this police officer in Minneapolis, Derek Chauvin, was going to kill African-American George Floyd that night. Nobody knew that. That simply happened, but it proved to be the spark, I think, that set off everything that took place afterwards. But the thing to note is that the organizations that then took to the streets were very well organized, well funded, totally coordinated, and of course, modern day technology, internet, social media assisted with that quite a lot. But the point to make here is that this is not something that just came into being after May the 25th. As a matter of fact, I spent the earlier part of today reading something I should have read a long time ago, I guess. But it is the manifesto, the 1966 manifesto of the Weather Underground, as you'll recall, Bill Ayers Group, Bernadine Dorn, terrorists, domestic. And they wrote, I believe this was probably written by Bill Ayers himself. It is called Prairie Fire, The Politics of Revolutionary Anti-Imperialism. And, I mean, it's a bit long. It's over 150-something pages, 51, 52 pages. Takes a bit to get through, but it's well worth it because it lays the premise back in 1966. This is, you know, 54 years ago for everything we're seeing today. The memes, the narratives, the objectives, all the same, all exactly laid out. And in brief, what they talk about is the guilt of America from the moment of its founding, just denigration of American history, American traditions, principles of our Constitution, Bill of Rights, which is not to gloss over the very real failures and faults of our country and our people over the years, but completely missing, you know, the exceptionalism of this country, and the really far-sighted, visionary brilliance of our founding fathers, whom we might recall. Amazingly, they were so young, I can hardly believe it. I have a daughter who's 33 years old. She's not married yet. She's engaged to be married next year. Okay? The Declaration of Independence was written by a 32-year-old by the name of Thomas Jefferson. I mean, if we can imagine, these were the millennials of their day. You know, Ben Franklin, in his, I don't know what at that time, 40s or perhaps 50 by that time, was the old man of the group with his wisdom. But the younger guys, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, they were millennials, or just about. Anyway, it's amazing. They gloss over all of that in this manifesto of the Weather Underground, talking about only the faults. But here's the thing. They put forth the very same narrative that we are hearing on the streets today, which is that this country and our system are irredeemable. There is no way to fix them. There is no way that they can be improved or made better. They are founded in evil. We are an ill for the world. And therefore, the whole thing, the entire structure must be overthrown by revolution, by violent revolution. And they very explicitly make that clear, that they are in the business of violent revolution. But then the memes, you know, this is some of the things that I wanted to mention. The memes, the narratives, the language, the you know, the vocabulary is exactly the same as we're hearing on the streets today. This is not new, and in fact, it's probably some of the same people. But it has to do with white supremacism, racism, white, especially white male supremacism. You guys are all bad. We just need to do without you. I don't know how we would have a country, but, you know, you need to be gone.
For no particular reason other than,
like that. Hmm?
Yep.
So it is all about the right and even the obligation of the minorities, in particular African Americans, but they name others like American Indians, First People, and others. But primarily it is African Americans that are the focus of this manifesto here, this particular screed. Again, it's called Prairie Fire. And they talk about, I mean, we'll remember the 60s, the violence of the 60s, and the cities that went up in flames, just like is being done again today.
Yeah.
And here is what they I'll just quote one thing which sort of summarizes what I'm saying here. Quote, racism is a weapon at the command of the ruling class, deliberately fashioned into a culturally sanctioned institution, written into law and enforced by all the power of conscious custom and the state. Okay? That is, in a nutshell, the theme of the Weather Underground and Prairie Fire. The answer for them is communism. They may call it socialism, but they mean communism. They mean Marxism.
Of course they do.
They mean an end to the free market capitalist system.
Hold on to that, Claire. At that point, hang on one second, because you said capitalism, so of course that means we have to take a break. When we come back, I want you to read that quote again, because it was really good, and I know people are going, God, what'd she say? So I thought we'd do a little ode to the millennials of our time. So here you go. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Donuts and fruitcake with no nuts, so good you could go nuts.
You're gonna have all those things when you get home.
No, now! I want a ball! I want a party! Pink macaroons and a million balloons and performing baboons and give it to me! Now! I want the world! I want the whole world! I want to lock it all up in my pocket. It's my bar of chocolate. Give it to me now. want today. I want tomorrow. I want to wear them like braids in my hair.
Doop-a-dee-dee. If you are wise, you'll listen to me. Who do you blame when your kid is up? Rat, pampered, and spoiled like a Siamese cat. Blaming the kids is a lie and a shame. You know exactly who's to blame. The mother and the father. Oompa, oompa, doop-a-dee-da. If you're not spoiled, then you will go far. You will live in happiness too. Like the oompa, loompa, loompa-dee-doo.
It's not that often that you're thinking about tomorrow's show and you're totally inspired by Willy Wonka. But, you know, that was the kind of stuff we grew up with. And you can say that out loud, but you can't say that now. You know, you can't say they're spoiled and all this stuff. So, anyway, I thought we'd let Willy Wonka do it. So Claire, give us that quote again, because that was awesome.
Yeah. Well, let me actually preface that quote with just a couple more from very early in the paper.
Oh, sure.
Well, it's a book. Unfortunately, it's out of print. You can't get the book in printed form that I could find anyway online, and so you've got to get it only in PDF form, which is how I've got it, but page 24. Our final goal, quote, is the destruction of imperialism, the seizure of power, and the creation of socialism. Then another quote, revolution is a dialectical process of destruction and creation. Finally, quote, socialism is the total opposite of capitalism, imperialism. It is the rejection of empire and white supremacy. Okay, that is where they're coming from. That is the revolutionary mindset. Racism is the means, the meme, the narrative, the means. And so to the quote I said before, quote, racism is a weapon at the command of the ruling class, deliberately fashioned into a culturally sanctioned institution, written into law and enforced by the power of conscious custom and the state. I would say, these days, racism is a weapon in the hands of the insurrectionists, in the hands of the revolutionaries in the street. They're the ones who have weaponized it.
And it's become very effective.
I think then as well as now.
And it's no accident. You know, for people that are at home, we were watching CNN last night, and it was just... it's just a good thing we weren't, you know, drinking coffee or had weapons in our hands or anything. It was just crazy.
Mostly peaceful protesters in Atlanta.
You might want to drink something else if you have to watch CNN.
Yeah, there was that too. But I'm always curious what they're telling people, because people believe that. They think it's just, you know, peaceful protesters. Then you switch to another channel, and you see the whole place is on fire. Like, I'm sorry, I've never been to a peaceful protest that burned down a building. Or
no, exactly.
Go ahead, Claire. I'll
I was just going to say, it reminds me of one of those CNN reporters speaking. I think it was during the very violent weekend of May 30th, 31st, a couple weekends ago, and he was on the street speaking about how peaceful the protests were, and his backdrop, I mean, literally his backdrop was a wall of flames as buildings were going up on fire, reminded me of nothing so much as the character we came all to call Baghdad Bob. Him?
Oh, yeah.
In the invasion, you know, of 2003, and the American tanks, the coalition tanks, the troops are literally crossing, I don't know, a bridge behind Baghdad Bob, who's there with the mic on the street, saying that, you know, everything's fine, it's under control. Believe me, not your lying eyes.
One of the things that Claire pointed out, and she and I were talking about over the break, is a lot of this goes back to even the 60s with Jerry Rubin and what would be called the Petniks or the radicals of that time, the hippies of that time. But what we have here is an alignment. And actually, Claire corrected me. I said to her that I thought Black Lives Matter, Muslim Brotherhood, the Black Panthers, which people don't even think are still around, but they are, and some of these other groups have really they've come together. And she corrected me, and I absolutely agree with the correction. They're aligned. They're all walking in lockstep at this point in time for one purpose, and that is to overthrow this government, this nation, our principles, our ideals, and the things that the founders brought together and gave to us as a gift. And it's no different than Fidel Castro did in Cuba when he sparked a revolution based on some new ideas of some concepts where the government, the state, would step in and take care of all of your woes and correct the problems. Well, here we have the same thing taking place. They have to do away with the old system, as they're saying, their old system. They have to do away with our culture. They have to do away with our priorities, our principles, et cetera, et cetera. And if I may, and Claire, if I'm upstaging here, you can deal with me later. One of the things, I know, she went to Marine boot camp, officer. She's like a sister to me, but I mean, she balls me out. I don't know where that comes from. But one of the things that I know Claire and I, we've talked about this because we've done briefings to elected officials and law enforcement together, are the number of businesses, corporations, if you will, in America that have prided themselves on being capitals and moving forward in the capitalistic market, and yet they're backing this radical revolution, not just Soros, and he is evil as far as you can throw him, but you've got people like Ben and Jerry's, the Ford Foundation, and Mr. Ford would, I think, rolling over in his grave because he was very conservative, but his family took over. And the Heinz ketchup? Come on, it's Heinz ketchup. And then the Rockefeller Center, the Rockefeller Foundation. And that's just a smidgen of some of the businesses and the corporate monies that are going into this thing. I think last week we talked about approximately, I think you and I were talking about, Aaron, 300 businesses that have been identified as being partially either supportive financially or clearly emotionally supportive or in alignment with the ideology of what these people are pushing. And so what Claire was pointing out earlier about the Marxism that has come into play by the 1960s Weather Underground, that has been adapted to the 2020s now, and it's very sophisticated, but it's the same communist ideology. Would you agree with that, Claire, even just to save
face?
Yeah, no,
absolutely. And what I thought I would do, you know, for folks today is give you a bit of background on who this is on the streets today. And it is a coalition. It's an alignment of three distinct groups that find common purpose in the goal of delegitimizing our legal system, America, the Constitution, the electoral process. And those three are the Islamic movement with the vanguard of the Muslim Brotherhood in this country, the Black Lives Matter movement, which is a movement, it's an umbrella group of many groups, and I can go into those for you, and then finally the communist, Marxist alignment under the umbrella of Antifa and all those groups aligned with it. But what they find in common is exactly what Lyle was just saying. They are aligned. They come together at this point in time not because they think alike or have the same ideology. They do not. But that the immediate goal of all three is to tear down our system, our law and order, our Constitution, the laws derived from it. And in this, they very much work together. I will show you, I'll tell you about the connections, the absolute direct connections between and among these groups, which folks might not ordinarily or easily just, come to think about as working together. But they are. Communists, Marxists, Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter, the Marxists, and the Muslim Brotherhood, those three.
So, Claire, I'm just curious. I was watching, one of the news networks this morning, and they were doing a live broadcast from Seattle, and I noticed on the street in several places they had stenciled big umbrellas. I was kind of curious. She used that term, and I thought, well, what is the deal with the umbrellas on the street? Is that what they're referring to?
I suspect it may be kind of like a tent or, you know, we're all in this together kind of a theme for the
mm-hmm.
moment.
Okay.
And I don't mean to say that every punk thug on the street understands what we're going to talk about today. They probably don't. They're coming out of an American educational system that's been absolutely devastated, and I can talk about that as well in terms of goals set by the Communist Party of the United States as far back as the 1930s, because that's when Antifa came to America, by the way. But I can outline for you the destruction of the educational system as an objective taken from a book called The Naked Communist, written in 1958 by a former FBI agent named W. Cleon Skousen, S-K-O-U-S-E-N, The Naked Communist. Chapter 13 of that book lays out, and he gets this from testimony in front of Congress, you know, the House on Un-American Activities and Senator Joseph McCarthy's hearings. That's where this information comes from. He, the FBI agent Skousen, put this together. But I will just tell you one, just to start with the destruction of our educational system, in case anybody thinks that just kind of sort of happened and those punk kids out there are as brain dead as we think they are just by chance. It's not by chance. Number 17 of the 45 goals of communism today in Chapter 13, Naked Communist, quote, get control of the schools. Use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum. Get control of teachers' associations. Put the party line in textbooks. Okay, they laid this out 90 years ago. Okay, we had no idea. People deride, people denigrate, people malign Senator Joe McCarthy. But what he laid out in his hearings and also the other hearings of the House on Un-American Activities in the 50s should have been a clarion call warning to all of us that communism, the ideals, the Hegelian dialectic that underlines it, communism, Marxism, were taking dead aim at our society, and they were doing it through our kids, and they're doing that through the academic system. And, well, we see the results, like you just said, on the streets of Seattle and other places today.
And everywhere else. And when we come back, I'd like to know what you think the link is between that and the sanctuary cities, because they just seem to be accidentally aligned, which I'm kind of thinking isn't an accident. So we'll be right back with our guests, Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. He's the silent guy in the background. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I don't think we got his check.
Overthrows his government. Diplomacy ain't working, and ammo's all been spent. The world is in a crisis, and the media's a curse. I'll tell you what to do when it goes from bad to worse. Call a Marine, stand a 911. They're built to improvise, adapt, and overcome. When you're in knee deep and you're up shit's creek, you've tried everything. Tell you what to do. Call a Marine. Tell you what to do, baby. You
can. All right. I guess in a pinch, if they decide to replace the police, we can call the Marines. Those are our choices, I guess. Did we Did we silence both Claire and Lyle?
No, we're enjoying our cup.
We're here.
What you were saying before the break, Aaron, is that the sanctuary cities, how may they play into this? It's my perception, based on intel and working with law enforcement folks and elected officials, that the sanctuary cities taken over by the mayors and the city councils that have aligned with the Communist Manifesto for the most part, they really have, they were test driving. Again, this is my opinion. I don't know what Claire might say on this, but it's my perception. Those were all test driving. What we're now beginning to see, where they set up a seven-block alternative form of government in Seattle. And that, I will say, is also a form of test driving, where these radical groups across the, not even radical groups, these Marxist groups across the nation are watching very intently and have also sent observers, I will tell you. We have this from various intel, that they have sent observers to Seattle to watch how this thing is set up, how they're interacting with existing city council, mayors, etc., and how they're able to protect it, which they have boundaries up now in Seattle. I think you probably know that. And they're armed. The people who are manning the boundaries are armed, and they have imposed a process by which you can enter and exit the seven-city block. They've taken over now a fire station also. Seattle has relinquished the fire station. So now they have a fire station and a police station up there in that seven-city block. And this is part of the destabilization I talked about at the onset of the show. And before Claire comes on and really nails this with the groups, all of these groups walking in lockstep with one another, their aim is to destroy the U.S. Constitution, our legal system, and our law and order. Those are the targets. The economy and stuff like that will all filter into this, but they're focusing on replacing our Constitution with a communist manifesto, as Claire has also been talking about, redoing our legal system, taking it away from what we've all grown up with, and even law and order, which is why they're pushing to defund law enforcement, push law enforcement out. And to have mayors, governors acquiesce to this is appalling. I don't think we would have ever imagined something like this could have ever happened in the United States of America. But you can see how far left these people have gone. I'm speaking even city councils, mayors, governors, other elected officials, and including certain chiefs of police who have adapted to the more socialistic, even Marxist style of governing. These are all pawns, I believe, because once they serve their purpose, they'll be done away with. But right now, they are serving a purpose. I do get a kick out of the Seattle mayor, who is doing everything she can to support these groups. And after she allowed them to take over a big part of her city, et cetera, et cetera, they went to impeach her. They wanted to move her out. And she was just befuddled by all that because she wasn't radical enough for them. So the sanctuary cities, I believe, which were housing the illegals coming in from Mexico, et cetera, et cetera, and we've done shows on that, I believe, those were all stages. Those were all test-driving platforms to see just how far they could go before there was some pushback from the federal government. And, of course, there was virtually none until Trump came in. Now, Claire can go ahead and take it with these groups that are actually running these, if you will, Aaron, I'm going to use your word as a transition, the sanctuary cities, which have now become communities that are under siege.
Exactly. Very, very good starting point for where we need to go next. And, Aaron, I think you were very perceptive there, talking about sanctuary cities, but there is precedent as well as corollary for what we're looking at in Seattle right now. And I would take us all the way back to the year 1870, when Marxists in Paris seized control of the city and declared themselves independent of the national government. They called it the Paris Commune. It was only about 2 months or so that before the French troops moved in and crushed the thing. But that's the model. That's the precedent. Now, bringing it more to the current day, I think we're looking at other you know, kinds of enclaves similar. And you mentioned sanctuary cities. I would go also to what have been called no-go zones, especially in Western Europe, like France and Brussels and other places, which are Muslim enclaves where the ethnic inhabitants, many of them immigrants from prominently Muslim countries like North Africa, Middle East, and so forth, have clustered in these neighborhoods, in these enclaves, and effectively been allowed to secede from the writ of national law. The French government in 2006 actually published online a list of 750 no-go zones in all of France.
Wow.
With their coordinates, their you know, latitude, longitude, streets, boundaries, and so forth. 750, and they admitted this online in 2006, no-go zones, from which criminality and terrorism break out to try to influence and eventually dominate and conquer the surrounding areas. Come back to this country. We have what I would call incipient or developing no-go zones right here in the United States, and it's not just me saying that. Law enforcement officers have told me and us that in some of the classes we've taught. Places like Little Mogadishu, the neighborhood in downtown Minneapolis that's bounded by the streets Cedar and Riverside. That is a primarily Somali inhabited neighborhood, seceded from the writ of not just municipal Minneapolis law, state Minnesota law, the constitutional law. There are places like that, and I've been there, outside of Dearborn or in Dearborn, Michigan, suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. There are other places around the country. We have no-go zones already in America. So seceding from the writ of constitutional law is the commonality here. And then we come forward to the sanctuary cities, which likewise follow that pattern, just openly, defiantly disobeying federal constitutional law. This is not part of federalism, as our founding fathers envisioned it to be, with states' rights and the Tenth Amendment and all that. That's not what this is. It is literally seceding from the writ of constitutional law. So, yes, those places are models for what we're seeing in Seattle today, this CHAZ, Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. On a radio show yesterday, my radio show host dubbed it Chazistan and the inhabitants Chazistani. I think that might work for us here for as long as this thing lasts. But that's a very good point, and it's precisely what is intended. Islands or enclaves, and the intent, of course, is to multiply these across the country. And to the extent that they're allowed to multiply by the mayors of these cities, by the governors of these states, who don't call out the National Guard and dismantle them immediately, as to their credit, you may have seen, the police force of Asheville, North Carolina, did last night.
Hold that thought, Claire. We're going to get cut off by the news.
When those thugs try to put up a no-go zone.
We're going to call it the news. We don't know what they're going to tell us, though, but we're getting cut off. We have these guys for the second hour. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Be right back.